You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of Benny and the Bets.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Benny and the Bets, Super Bowl week edition part two. And we have a guest live from Radio Row. It's my friend Connor Orr, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, been covering the NFL for many years over at SI, who you also should be following on X, on Twitter, whatever you're calling it these days, at Connor Orr. We are, of course, presented by PXG and PXG Kansas City. If you have not had an opportunity to get fitted yet, please go ahead and do so. Got my set of Gen 6s right behind me. Waiting for the weather to finally start consistently warm so I can go out and just feel like I'm way better than I am on the golf course. Are you a golfer at all, Connor? Do you have a chance to get out and play, especially once the season is done?
So I live in New Jersey, so our golfing season is about 2 months long, and I golf once a year with my father-in-law, and you let him win, and then you pack up and you go home. So, but I do. I religiously play once a year, and I do enjoy it. And every time I play, I'm like, I wonder why I don't play more.
It's the clubs. You gotta get your favorite clubs.
I've had the same set of clubs since I was 16. So they don't fit, and then the grips have disintegrated, so my hands are like black after I'm done.
Yeah, you get like the full hand. It looks like you're wearing an extra set of gloves on top of the gloves by the time you're already done.
It's pretty gross.
It's great to have you here. I'm excited because I think a lot of times here in Kansas City, we fall victim to some of our own narratives, and I always like to get a national perspective, especially with this team this year at this moment. I did an interview earlier today with VSiN, and they were asking me kind of like, what's the mood in Kansas City right now? And my truthful answer was, people are already talking about the Valentine's Day parade, the third one in 5 years. There is a sense of maybe, I don't want to say unfound confidence, but for a team that's the underdog by 2.5 points heading into this game against a very formidable opponent who has been really at the top of their game fairly consistently with the exception of that three-game stretch, from a national perspective, what is the narrative, at least, that you've gotten about this year's Chiefs team and the actual matchups themselves? Do most people view them as a rightful underdog, or do people talk about them as, this is a team with this coaching staff, with this defense, with this quarterback, they should be the favorites?
I think at this point, I mean, I always kind of bet what I hear super consistently. And so, for example, we came into this week thinking, okay, Steve Spagnuolo's a genius. He's going to do whatever he did in, the Giants-Patriots Super Bowl and the last Chiefs Super Bowl. They're going to be unstoppable, just like they were against Baltimore. They're going to shut down Brock Purdy. And I'm always kind of like, not so fast. Kansas City wins a lot of games because their back end players, their secondary, their linebackers tackle really well. But all that takes is one bad game, especially against a team like this, who are masters at gaining yards after the catch. And you all of a sudden find yourself in like a 10-point hole against the 49ers. The game is over. It's already done. And so for me, I'm kind of looking at it like, yeah, we came into this game rightfully praising Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, he's one of the best defensive coordinators in the league, and they've had some really good defensive performances. But who's to say that the script can't flip? I mean, San Francisco has been a dominant offensive team for the last 3 years, and they could turn it on just as easily as well.
I think that your perspective on Spagnuolo is really interesting, because I do think collectively, like, we always sometimes play victim to recency bias, right? And recency bias will tell you that the Chiefs offense has found that dimension that they need to get to while the defense has remained consistent throughout the course of the year. At the same point, you talked about the yards after contact. That's a big stat. The Chiefs also rank bottom seven in yards per rush allowed against arguably the offensive player of the year. I guess based off of sort of where these matchups intersect, are you more curious in sort of the chess match between Shanahan and Spagnuolo, or more so Andy Reid versus Steve Wilks? Like, where do you find the matchup that maybe intrigues you the most within the context of the game?
To me, it's Shanahan and Spagnuolo, because I think the knock on Kyle has always been that, you know, he coaches really well when the game plan works, right? Because the game plan is a little bit different than maybe your typical, the way you would set up a typical game plan. It's basically a storybook, and one play builds on another play, builds on another play. And if things get messed up, it's like ripping the middle out of a book, and it gets complicated. And he doesn't really typically have what you would call those gotta have it plays, where it's third and five. Like Andy, you know, for years, the Chiefs, like, they would run that little stunt thing with Tyreek Hill on third and short, fourth and short, and just that little quick pass. And they would always have that. The 49ers don't really have that. Because it doesn't fit into the way that they want to build their game plan. And so what happens if they get knocked off their block really early in a game? We've seen a little bit of resilience from this team recently, but is that a flash in the pan, right? You know, have they kind of exhausted their afterburners at this point after coming back in the playoffs, especially the way they did against Green Bay?
Do you look at one player in particular for either side as an X factor, the guy that maybe not necessarily would be sort of a dark horse for an MVP bet per se, but we'll be talking about this player's performance as it results to the impact on a win?
I really think, I mean, just in talking to the 49ers coaches especially, if the Chiefs secondary continues to tackle as well as they have, this is going to be a really hard game for San Francisco, right? We know they're going to put guys in space. We know they're going to get good playmakers the ball. The question is, how much will they make you pay for it once they start moving around? And I do think if they have a strong set of run fit game, or, you know, just quick pass fit game from that Chiefs defense, especially your corners and your safeties, some of your linebackers, that's a game over scenario. Because if you can put a lid on that offense and prevent the yards after the catch, then it changes the entire complexion of the game.
What have you made of the Chiefs' offensive identity, both throughout the course of the regular season to the postseason, where it feels like Mahomes is a little bit more in rhythm? They feel like they've had more so of an identity consistently with Pacheco, who now looks healthy. Do you feel like they're weapons now with a healthy Kelce and Rashee Rice as that top-tier wide receiver? Is that sustainable? Or are we looking at maybe a sample that's, you know, everything just kind of worked out well, even against superior opponents on the road?
I mean, Baltimore was impressive, because I don't know what your read on it was, but I mean, just watching Travis Kelce for the past few weeks leading up to that, a lot of their early success in the Baltimore game was a result of just superior physicality. You know, I thought it was like winning really tight one-on-one matchups, and less about, you know, we scheme this so this guy's 5 yards wide open. And part of that is obviously Baltimore and how they want to play. But part of that was, I think, a concerted effort on the part of Kelce, on the part of Andy Reid, to come in there and assert like a physical superiority. I mean, that first touchdown drive, I think it was the first one, where, you know, Kelce wasn't really open at all, but he had a lot of catches. He gained a lot of yards. He was muscling people. And you hadn't seen that for the last few weeks. Like, I think there was sort of like almost like a surrender. You kind of played almost like he was like sick or something, you know, and you just kind of shying away from contact a little bit. Whereas I thought Baltimore, it's like, okay, hello. Like, everybody's woken up, and, you know, you were winning physical battles. And that's huge, especially going up against a team like San Francisco, with really good pass covering linebackers, like guys who are going to hit you, bother you, and be up your you-know-what the whole game.
The Baltimore win, I think, was maybe a turning point for me to think, yeah, if they go and play San Francisco, there's a real, I don't want to call it a chance, but I think there's a sense of newfound confidence that even though you could talk to Mahomes and Kelce and a lot of the core parts, Chris Jones, the core guys on this team, I think there was still that slight suspicion from fans of saying to themselves, yeah, like Buffalo, you know, at some point Josh Allen is going to turn the ball over, and, you know, they're going to shadow in the marquee times of a big moment. With Baltimore, you just didn't get that sense. The Chiefs have had success against Lamar Jackson in the past, but we're talking about a fairly small sample. We're also talking about a very different Lamar with a different offensive identity than in years past. You had Todd Monken there now, and that's changed too. Now I think because of that win, how dominant they are on both sides of the ball, and because they have that physical approach, now I think that's where maybe the mindset changed, both maybe internally, but certainly around the fan base about this team, that there's really no sense of concern, at least anymore, at least from the fans that I've talked to.
Well, I would caution, don't turn into Patriots fans. It's not fun. You know, like, it's not an enjoyable existence. I've always, you know, I we're working on the magazine issue for If the Chiefs Win, and I think one of my major takeaways is that, let's say they do win this game, it becomes, you become a dynasty, but you become like a post-dynasty dynasty in that you are in New England territory. You're starting to be in that range. And from that point on, it's not fun. It's, you're like an Alabama fan. Like, you're expecting to win. When you don't, it's disappointing. And now you're wearing the biggest target in sports, and every team is just designing things to try to take you out. That sucks as a fan. I don't know. Like, I'm an Orioles fan, and this year was terrible. Like, we were like rolling, and I was like, this isn't fun anymore, because now next year I'm going to be upset if they don't win the division, and I'm going to be mad if they don't win the World Series, and I'm going to be pounding the table and be like, why aren't they trading for all these great players? So I would just say to Chiefs fans, like, you know, even if you lose, it's fine. You know, don't be overconfident. Just like accept this idea of an underdog and enjoy it, because it's a fun thing. It's a good thing to have.
I didn't think in the midst of this episode I'd find the one Orioles fan that's like, oh man, we got Corbin Burns. Now I'm going to be even more invested into the season. Like, it's a take. and I'll tell you too, like, a lot of our listeners, our producer Nick is a KU fan for basketball. So they've been dealing with this type of mindset for many years. So I mean, listen, as I suppose I had it as a Bulls fan growing up in Chicago in the 90s, and boy, do I miss those days, because they are fleeting. When they go, you're chasing for something that will probably never exist again. So it's an interesting dynamic that I hadn't really considered.
And at some point, I mean, you know, Travis, I mean, I had done a piece for Travis on the in the magazine a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, everyone in Kansas City, to a person, is saying there's a level of his game that we haven't seen yet. There's an evolution that we haven't considered. But we don't know if that's true. You know, I mean, we don't know how much longer that offensive line is going to play well. We don't know if Isaiah Pacheco develops some of the ball security issues that were a hallmark of his before his time in the NFL, or if any of these other receivers pan out. And so it's a call to stay in the moment. That's what I'm saying.
So speaking of staying in the moment, for anybody that has yet to read your latest piece over at SI.com, and I certainly encourage anybody to go ahead and do so, there's been sort of these larger-than-life moments, and I think sometimes to a fault, we tend to weave in maybe narratives that shouldn't be there into the Super Bowl to try to tell a story. But you actually pitched one of the legends in Hollywood, in Angelo Pizzo, who wrote and created Rudy, Hoosiers, amongst many others, Breaking Away. And the sort of the three pitches that you gave him as it pertains to the Super Bowl, all of which I think are fairly compelling from the mindset of a sports fan and even a bettor to a certain extent, he had a hard time getting behind. Why?
He said he thought that Travis Kelce was not relatable. So I was like, hey, you know, what about this? Like, guy from Cleveland Heights, you know, gets kicked off his, you know, college football team, and then makes his way to the pros, and then gets really good and dates a pop star. And, you know, he was like, ah, this sounds like A Star Is Born. And he's like, I didn't like that movie. And he's like, I find Travis Kelce hard to connect to, because he's a really good looking, personable 6'4" behemoth of a human being. And he's like, and I think that we underplay, and this was a good point I hadn't really considered, we underplay how smart Travis Kelce is, and for a lot of reasons. And when you think about how, I'm trying to think of like the right word, but when you think about how able he is to play a character, like go on Saturday Night Live, all that kind of stuff. Him and Taylor's relationship actually makes some degree of sense, you know, some like weird degree of sense. I mean, he's got it all. And so Angela made a good point where it's like, yeah, you know what? I mean, you know, it's hard to see him. It's hard to look at that and see a movie of someone overcoming odds when like you've kind of been blessed genetically and from a personality standpoint.
What surprised me was you also pitched him on the concept of both Brock Purdy, which I think feels like a very Angelo Pizza type of
game,
right? And also, I had a conversation with Damon Bruce last week on the show about even just the title of Mr. Irrelevant makes it easier for us to dismiss his accomplishments, even though we want it to be in and of itself a success story. And to me, that feels like it's set up, like it's got like Disney, Mighty Ducks, like all the feels just right there for you, especially if they win this game.
I thought so too, but Angela was like, you got drafted. So who cares if you're Mr. Irrelevant? You got drafted, which means you're pretty good. And you were good enough to play quarterback at Iowa State, which is fair. So I think it's hard to, you know, I could see like the tagline being like, nobody believed in him except for like a really pretty decent football school in the Big 12, you know? So it kind of does take away the Rudy aspect of it. But I mean, if you're talking about like a modern football fairy tale, I mean, you know, the bar is pretty high for a movie. Like Kurt Warner got one.
Yeah.
And so if you're making like the bar Kurt Warner, you know, I would say it comes up a little bit short, you know, but who knows? I mean, I could see like a made for TV kind of thing, you know, like Lifetime, Mr. Irrelevant, something like that. That'd be kind of fun.
from a Lifetime movie to the NFL Network. It feels like it would be like self-in-house produced.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, sometimes you got to self-publish. That's
right. And then narrated by like Kurt Warner. Connor Orr is with us here on Benny and the Bets. He is live from Radio Row. Amongst all the wild and wonderful sightings that have come your way this week, has there been a name or a face that either A, you were not expecting to be there that showed up and wowed you, or maybe the most irreverent personality that you're like, oh, this will be fun? Like, who are the names that kind of caught your attention besides the usual big stars that work the room?
The guy from Pawn Stars.
The father?
The dad, yeah. And okay. I couldn't remember his name. So he was walking right up to our table. We made eye contact. And I was like, you know. And then I was going to jump up, but he still seems pretty physically imposing. So I couldn't jump up and like give him a hug or anything. I thought he would like shove me. So that guy, maybe Carrot Top. That was a good one. Saw Carrot Top and Bobby Flay. So Bobby Flay came to the Sports Illustrated set, and I got wind that it would be super unprofessional for me to jump up and try to get a picture with him. So instead of hanging around and just like fanboying out, I went to the gym. So I had to ask. I would have had to have bothered him. So if I couldn't bother him, I just didn't want to be in the same place.
I've been to Radio Row once, and it was when our afternoon show back years before I joined SI, it was the 2015 Super Bowl. So it was Seattle and New England, and it was in Arizona. And for whatever reason, like the worlds collided. I'd been trying to book JB Smoove from Curb Your Enthusiasm on our show for felt like a year. And it just so happened that he was in Arizona. He was either filming a commercial or was doing some sort of publicity. And his agent like got back to me and said, hey, JB is here. Can you let him into Radio Row? Like, yes, of course. Like we're in the middle of it. Well, and I go up, I meet him and his handler, this nicest guy in the world. Much a little bit more diminutive than I thought he would be. But you know, it's almost kind of like the Kelsey effect. All of a sudden I walk down with him and all of a sudden I saw all the eyeballs from all the different like radio shows and media members turn towards JB, and then constantly because I was standing next to him on me, and it was wild. It was just like a sea of people that just got up and were all trying to take selfies and grab him. And of course he walked right over to our show, and I felt like, okay, I feel like even if I fuck up the rest of this, I did my job for one day and got him, and we were the first show that he appeared on. So I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, like Joe Montana is here, and Joe Montana is always really cool. Cake Boss was here.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I would say all the stars have been out. You know, you got Cake Boss, you got everybody.
One other question for you as it pertains to sort of the AFC West in general, because you've been the voice of the coaching hires and the future coaching hires to be, and a trusted voice at that, especially when it comes to names that maybe we hadn't heard about before that could be on the rise, could be talked about. And I'm curious to get your perspective with the shakeup now in the AFC West with Jim Harbaugh coming to LA to coach the Chargers. So we'll yet have another year of people picking the Chargers to win the division. And for many years, those people have continued to be disappointed. And then Antonio Pierce, who I felt was put in, I was really happy for him that he won that locker room and was able to have the opportunity to stay on. And someone that I feel like is genuinely like a good, rootable dude. For a team that a lot of people have a very difficult time rooting for. So given the current shakeup with two new coaches coming in, how do you evaluate the two of them and sort of their outlook moving forward within the course of that division?
Antonio Pierce, it's always going to be tough because you really lost, I think, probably the better option at offensive coordinator. You have Patrick Graham on the staff, which is good, but I mean, outside of that, I mean, you're kind of starting over at quarterback. You bring in someone like Luke Getsy, I think is good. But, you know, I think you're starting from a different place than a lot of these other spots. And the track record of interims is just not good. And I think it all has to do with the psychological ability to play off of someone that people didn't like. And then once you lose that tailwind, you know, what do you become without that? And Antonio's great. I mean, he's coached at every level, Super Bowl champion, real dude. And that's playing well in the NFL right now. So I'm never going to say he doesn't have a chance. I'm just saying, like, I think, you know, if you started everybody out at 0-0 again, I would say he's got the hardest chance of winning that division. And I don't think that's an overly controversial statement. I mean, I think that Mark Davis is probably letting this roster kind of bottom out a little bit until they can retool, and see what they can do with it. But in terms of Harbaugh, I mean, this was the move that the Spanos family had to make. You had to, you know, you were like Mike McCoy and Anthony Lynn and Brandon Staley and these coaches who are good, you know, but not really expensive, not really guys who had a lot of other teams beating down their door, you know, and all of a sudden, it's like, okay, this is, we got to go outspend everybody. We got to spend a lot of money. We got to get a guy who knows what he's doing. Can't screw this up. Got to get out of the way. And Harbaugh's not going to let you be mediocre. So I think that there is there's something really exciting about that. I do think the profile of the division is going to change because of him specifically.
Do you see any chance of them moving on from Herbert and trying to start over with quarterback that he handpicks?
I think Herbert was a big part of him taking that job, but you know, a year or two down the line, if it's not working, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he drafts someone somewhat soon. I mean, he did that with Colin Kaepernick, and by the time Alex Smith had gotten that one concussion, they were ready to go. I mean, they had a whole other offense already ready to rip. And so, I mean, Harbaugh is obsessed. He is one of the most tireless people in the industry. And to say that he's not going to throw everything on the line for a Super Bowl is crazy. He's ready to roll. So I don't think he's going to give it. There's no contingency, right? I mean, I think he's prepared for the fact that maybe Justin Herbert's not as good as everyone thinks he is, or that Justin Herbert's way better than we think. And I think both of those could be true.
Yeah. There was always sort of the thought in my head of if Chicago is not enticed with Caleb, or the reports of that he's going to try to power struggle his way to Washington are true, if maybe there becomes an opportunity for Chicago to move that pick, find another way, find another avenue where then the Chargers can have their pick of the litter there and then move on from Herbert if they believe that they need to completely rebuild and retool that roster. It's a fascinating aspect of this whole build, but it does make for a fascinating division race for many, many years to come. Connor, on the other side, I'm curious to get a Super Bowl prediction pick, maybe if you have a bet or two. We'll get that on the other side. And, of course, I've got some props that I did not mention last week. I'll reveal those coming up next. Stay with us. This is Benny and the Bets, presented by PXG.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Benny and the Bets. Ben Heisler here, Connor Orr out in Las Vegas on Radio Row. You should read his work over at Sports Illustrated. Longtime senior scribe over at SI, and you should be following him as well, at Connor Orr. Connor, before we get to an actual pick on the game and a couple of bets, I do want to let our folks who are tuning in, who are watching and hanging out with us, that if you have not gotten yourself ready for the Super Bowl yet, and if you are looking for a super offer for Super Bowl 58, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. In fact, new customers can bet on the big game, turn $5 into $200 instantly in bonus bets. You can find right now the Kansas City Chiefs as a 2-point dog over at DraftKings Sportsbook with a total of 47.5. So here's what you do. You download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use the code KCSN, and new customers can bet $5 to get 200 instantly in bonus bets. That's only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 58. Don't forget to use that code KCSN. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER, or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Just call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, must be 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. My voice is starting to go out. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after they are issued. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. So with that all of the way, Connor, do you have a bet? Do you have a pick for this upcoming matchup, and where are you leaning?
I am betting the octopus for my good buddy Mitch Goldich, as I always do, because Mitch is the greatest person in the world. He invented the octopus. He is an absolute stud. And so ceremonially, I will bet the octopus in Mitch's honor. And I would, so I took the Niners by like 13. And And I just think, you know, I remember the Tampa Super Bowl, and I think that this is a similar profile where I think that you can get up on Kansas City early, you know, like let's say San Francisco gets the ball first, they score a touchdown, there's, you know, maybe just a three and out and then a field goal, you know, that can happen really easily. And then all of a sudden you are at the whim of a game plan that Kyle Shanahan put together for this exact moment. And I don't know, you know, once you're in a pass only situation for Mahomes, you have all these great rushers. You have a lot of depth. I mean, look at what Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea did to this team. And I get it. It's a different team. It's a different time. But we're talking about similar types of players in big games. You know, Kansas City's offensive line is certainly better than it was. But who's to say that can't happen again? Like, it could be that kind of game, you know, where if Mahomes is put in a situation where he's got to throw every down, you know, and they don't get the flags, then all of a sudden this is, you know, this is kind of a runaway.
If you were to bet the 49ers to cover the spread by, would you have it at 13?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's say we, you know, extend it a little bit, make it 49ers 12.5 over at DraftKings Sportsbook plus 454. So a $100 bet would bring back $454.
You're welcome, everybody.
Listen, it's good to have a heel in town. And I do think there is a scenario where, like, to me, if the Chiefs win, I don't think they're blowing out San Francisco. If the 49ers win, I think it's just that. It's they get off to a big lead. Even with the defensive adjustments for Kansas City in the second half, it's just too much to overcome. And even with Mahomes and Kelce and Rice and Reed, with that pass rush set up perfectly to be able to pin their ears back, that would make for a difficult task. I'm gonna run through a couple props that I have, and I mentioned my bet. I did take the Chiefs at +2.5. I felt it was a good number at the time. It was also a hedge for me with taking the 49ers midseason at 5-1. But rapid fire, I'm going to run through some of these numbers for you, and you're going to tell me if you didn't just hate it or love it.
Okay.
Super Bowl, highest scoring quarter. I'm taking the first quarter. I talked about this on the show before, Connor. Chiefs second half unders, 18-2 this year. Chiefs fourth quarter unders, 19-1. The second quarter, I think, is the one that you have to worry about, but you're getting such good value. +850 for the first quarter to be the highest scoring quarter.
Love it.
Okay. Christian McCaffrey for an anytime touchdown. The only problem is that he is very expensive for an anytime touchdown. So instead, I'm going to take him for a first half anytime touchdown at +140. 13 of his 16 touchdowns scored this year were first half.
I love it because Kyle is not going to give anybody else the ball in the goal line. I mean, he's not gonna put his team in a situation where he has to trust someone that he doesn't completely trust as much as he does Chris McCaffrey.
Okay. I'm on Mahomes at +160 for Super Bowl MVP. There's a few other long shots that I'm on as well. I'll give you some of the more interesting ones, but for our listeners, Christian McCaffrey, I'm over 29.5 rush yards in each half at +120. Here's one I think you'll enjoy. Kyle Juszczyk to record a reception. It's a little juicy, -150, but it always feels like he's that one guy that every time you think he's just not going to be a part of the offensive game plan as a receiver, they get him the ball. So I'm on him to record a reception at -150, and also a dart throw at +7,000 to score the first touchdown of the game. Everyone thinks it's going to McCaffrey. Ooh. Instead, fullback dive to Juszczyk.
Or like some sort of a play action rollout.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he's like the last person covered. I like that.
Okay. Also on McCaffrey, over 89.5 rushing yards, was able to take advantage of a boost to move that to +120. A couple Chiefs props that I'm on. I like the over for Patrick Mahomes rush attempts at over 4.5. Also took the over on Travis Kelce for both receiving yards at 69.5 and over 6.5 receptions. Those were taken at the very beginning of last week, Connor, knowing that the public was very much likely going to move those numbers, which they have.
I think that's smart. I mean, it's where it's Mahomes' comfort level, right? And, you know, especially if this game turns into a pin your ears back pass rush fest, you know, yes, Travis will be covered, but he's the one guy, you know, he's the guy you trust, right? And I think that's something that ultimately matters more than anything else.
Okay. Let me give you a few other dark horses that I'm on for Super Bowl MVP. I don't even think this is a dark horse. I think I got really good value on Deebo Samuel at 35-1.
I have Deebo Samuel as my MVP.
Awesome.
I do.
Yes. Love to see it. Let me give you the complete pizza money, dart throws. Something crazy has to happen for it to happen, but I think it could happen. Harrison Butker, 350-1. Second half, we talked about some of those second half under numbers where all of a sudden it just turns into a defensive slugfest. Chiefs get down the field. The only way that they're scoring is field goals. Butker kicks the game winner. 350-1 bet cashes.
I voted for, I think, 4 Super Bowl MVPs. I would have a really hard time. If it's like a 67-yard game winner, okay, you know, but circumstantially, it would have to be wild.
Okay, let me give you one more. Again, not a whole lot of history behind it, but I think the corner that everyone has talked about, and rightfully so, in Kansas City has been the play of Legarius Sneed. I think the 49ers will try to game plan and try to avoid Sneed as much as possible. I think that we'll try to attempt more opportunities downfield against Trent McDuffie. And McDuffie at 500-1. And by the way, I kind of stole this a little bit from Peter Schrager, because he said in his you know, now infamous preseason prediction where I think he's gotten the Super Bowl teams like 4 years in a row, correct, on Good Morning Football. He had Trent McDuffie with a pick six for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl over the 49ers and predicted that back, I think, in early September. So if that actually comes to fruition, I'm holding a card on a guy returning a pick six at 500-1 odds.
Well, he has a copy of the script. Someone gave it to him.
So that's true.
He would know, you know?
So if anything, it's just a really good investment.
Free money.
Free money. I think legally I'm not allowed to say that on this show, but then again, you heard the man. The script has been written. Connor, I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for hanging out with us from Radio Row. Outstanding work, continued success. And for anybody that is not following you on Twitter, on X, at Connor Orr, reading your work at SI, any other places, avenues that they can find your outstanding work?
You can go to Barnes & Noble and pick up a magazine. Why don't you? You know? Sit down, leave your phone at home, go to Barnes & Noble and buy a magazine. Sit there and read it. That's my pitch.
Love it. Connor, thank you, man. It's great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.